One-liners and recalibration. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 209.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, 'cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Hello! Hello, friends, and welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. I'm your host, Dan Bublich Jr., here with you as always. It is June 29th, 2021. I hope everybody had a fantastic weekend. I hope you had a chance to listen to the last episode I released, the bonus episode I released on Friday. It was a fun conversation I had with an old friend, my old business partner, get a little bit of insight into my life before I did stand-up comedy, and we got to talk about his writing habits and his great sci-fi book series that he has out. It's called Shadowed Stars. There's at least book number one is out, number two is on the way. He's got plans for books three, four, and five, so there's lots of stuff going out there. If you haven't, go listen to the episode and then go to shadowedstarsbooks.com and order your copy of his book. It'll be especially if you like sci-fi, and then make sure you get the books 2, 3, 4, and 5. Get them all. But now we're back to comedy. Today's guest is a comedian. Today I am joined by Joe Christensen, who has his own great podcast called Joke Quest 200. It's a fun formatted joke writing podcast. If you enjoy stand-up comedy and you enjoy jokes, I recommend going and listening to that podcast. You can get it wherever you get podcasts. So wherever you're listening to my podcast right now, you can probably find Joe's podcast. That's Joke Quest 200. I was actually a guest on an episode that came out a couple weeks ago. So go over there, check that out. You can hear me over there reading some of my jokes. So that's what's coming up today on the show. But before we get to that, we got to take care of the housekeeping. And I took it out. I was doing the little bumper because I thought it would be kind of fun. But I don't know. I don't think it was, it didn't fit. I don't think it fits. So we're just going to go into this. So I got a couple shows that I got to talk about. June 30th, which is, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, it's tomorrow, Wednesday. I will be at the House of Comedy in Bloomington, the Mall of America. I'm producing my first show there, Exposed. It is a storytelling showcase. I have several Twin Cities heavy hitters are on the show. We're all going to be telling stories related to a theme, along mixed in with our jokes, and it's going to be a good time. So if you're in the Twin Cities area, in fact, Joe Christensen is on this show as well. So if you're in the area, come see us at the House of Comedy. You can get tickets at houseofcomedy.net. Go get them. Come out to the show. It'll be fun. And then the next week, next Wednesday, the following Wednesday after that, which I'll talk more about next week, but I am in the World Series of Comedy at the House of Comedy, again, here in Bloomington, Minnesota. I got into that satellite, so that'll be really fun. The Dan on the Run Comedy Tour. That's what I want to talk to you about right now, because that has been pretty fun. I just got back yesterday. It was yesterday, early in the morning, from the next leg of the tour. It was great. I went to the Omaha, Nebraska, and I performed at the Backline Comedy Theater. My buddy Tom Chilstrom came with. Brooke Barcel was hosting. Those are both comics that have been previous guests on the podcast. You can go back and listen to those episodes. But Tom came out with me to open for me. We had a fantastic time in Omaha. I got to go check out a really cool comic book store. Thanks, Jeremy Plum, for the recommendation. That was a good call. And so check that out. That was good. We had dinner, got to see some old comic buddies while I was there, which was fun. And it was over all in all a good show. Then Saturday, Tom and I went to, we had a show as part of my tour in Osage, Iowa at Limestone Brewers. And that was a fantastic show. That town came out. It was a fundraiser for some new equipment for their park. And quite a few people came up. They raised some money for it. And they had good beer. They had good pizza. And it was a good time. The owners, Tony and Josh, were fantastic. The manager, or I guess the taproom captain, as they titled it, Lisa Marie, was fantastic. All the people that we met were fantastic. It was a good show. That's what comedy is all about, bringing people together for good causes and good laughs, and that's what we did. And I'm excited about this tour. But for the next couple weeks, the tour is on a little hiatus just because I'm doing stuff locally. I got a family gathering situation coming up that I got to go to, and then I'm performing, like I said, in the World Series of Comedy. But the tour will return in July. In fact, July 16th, I will be at Buffalo Ridge Brewing in Hartford, South Dakota. And then July 17th, I will be at the Old Grant School in Watertown, South Dakota. Then the next weekend after that, I will be at Boss's Comedy Club, Rapid City, South Dakota. I will be at Red Rooster Coffee House in Aberdeen, South Dakota on the 24th. And then on the 25th of July, I will be at Brick and Barley in Grand Forks, North Dakota. So there's still some fun shows coming up. For all the information on all my shows, go to danbublitz.com. Click the schedule tab. You'll find all my information there. For the Art of Bombing, of course, you can go to artofbombingpod.com. Submit a bomb if you'd like. You can buy a hat. You can follow the podcast. That's the most important thing you can do. Follow the podcast wherever you listen to the podcast. We'd really appreciate that. And then maybe leave us a 5-star rating, maybe a review. You know, the same stuff I talk about every week. It definitely helps, and I appreciate all the help that we get spreading the word about this fantastic, fun podcast about comedy and those bad shows we have on the road. Again, that's artofbombingpod.com. And then last and probably the least important thing, if you enjoy what I'm doing, you can tip me if you'd like. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/debubcomedy. And throw a fiver my way if you'd like. Shout out to Josh Liston, who is a fan of the show. He threw in $5. He bought me a coffee last week. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it much. I really do. So I think that's all I've got for this little intro. It's a little longer than usual, but wanted to talk about the tour because I'm having so much fun with the tour. So let's get into this conversation with Joe Christensen. Enjoy.
And now, it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
My girlfriend makes me a bunch of cool homemade gifts. She's sewn me things, she's painted me things, she's written me things. But my favorite gift she's ever given me, I hate to be kind of crass on this, but she gave me this whole big booklet of blowjob coupons.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Check this out, 30% off. She's a prostitute. All right. I have this little nephew, Jack. I get to watch him sometimes. Last time I was watching him, I was trying to teach him my favorite game. You know, Monopoly? It's kind of dumb because he's like 18 months old or whatever. Should have been able to tell he wasn't ready for the game because after a couple rolls of the dice, he picked up one of those red hotel pieces and swallowed it. And we were all like, holy shit, dude, you can't do that. You guys know, right? You have to have four of those little green things first. You guys been to Alaska?
No.
I hate Alaska. Went up to Fairbanks, Alaska one time, had a one-night stand, lasted 4 fucking months. I think probably the worst thing about getting your penis stuck in one of those Chinese finger traps is knowing they have a real small penis.
No.
So have you, outside of doing mics, have you been on the road at all in the last month
or so? Really? Not really. Not much. No. No.
No.
I don't know. I don't know how to fully extrapolate on me not getting work.
Well, no, I didn't. You might not be working on purpose. I mean, some comics are still kind of hesitant to go out. Not necessarily a sense of you're not getting work.
I am an incel when it comes to comedy right now, if that makes sense. I'm on forums getting all angry at all the chads that are getting the jobs.
Oh, okay.
If that makes sense.
I totally understand.
No, I mean, part of it is I just didn't reach out for a while. And I just started doing that again this year. I have a new tape, which is not public, but it's out there. So I'm sending it out to a bunch of people, and none of the bookers have watched it based on the view count. But
that is one thing that's nice about YouTube too. When you have unlisted videos that you use for booking or for like festival submissions, you can actually tell if they actually watched the video.
Yeah,
because it ain't gonna have very many views. You can really keep track.
If you really want to make sure, threaten their family directly during the video, the booker's family, and then you'll get a notification like, through YouTube that they've watched it. It'd be like, this video threatens my family.
It'd be funny, like halfway through the video or at the very beginning, you threaten them. You do one joke and they're like, oh, this might be good. And then all of a sudden you just pop up like threatening them and threatening their family.
I will come to your house.
You don't finish the rest of this video. I'm going to murder you in your sleep.
Whoa. Yeah. Fair enough.
It's like, all right, I'll finish watching this.
So I'm ready. I'm ready to go do the road. I'm all vaxxed up.
Yeah. So am I. Being vaxxed up. I think it's things are really starting to opening up, which is good. It's very hopeful now. A few months ago, it didn't seem hopeful.
I agree. I think in general, it's very hopeful. But it like depends on where you were at when this all.
Yeah.
Kind of shut down. Like, if you had a lot of stuff booked, and then the bookers are reaching back out to you, and you're like, oh, I'm getting all these dates filled, that's pretty cool. But, like, for me, there are things that got canceled, but, like, they got canceled at such a time, and I was just new to it, that I'm probably not going to get called back to get booked.
Yeah.
They're going to go through their old stable.
Yeah.
That's what I'm kind of getting. Like, we're going to work our regulars for a while.
Yeah, well,
and make sure they get work, which I get it.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, essentially the pandemic just demoted everybody, too. Like, that's the thing, because people, all the comics that were doing theaters are suddenly now going back to comedy clubs, and then, you know, the headliners that were in comedy clubs are now featuring for these bigger, you know.
Yeah, it's wild. Like,
it is, but it's slowly, I see more and more comics are starting to do theater tours again, so it's hopeful that.
And what's going to happen, too, with those, even those theater people, they're going to start working in Hollywood more, too. It's weird that we're somehow part of the same ecosystem as someone who's, like, starring in a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
But technically, if they make another Marvel movie, that means that that person's is not taking a lesser gig in Hollywood. And that means that some theater person isn't having to go into, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like a chain.
Yep.
Maybe. Yep. I don't know.
No, that makes sense. I mean, it's... And the other thing is if said comic is making a big Marvel movie or whatever, they're also not touring because they can't.
Exactly. So yeah. That moves everybody.
It's another spot that somebody else can move into, and then if somebody else can move into that person's spot, and so it's all connected.
Also, the boats. Once we get those comics on the boats and we ship them away,
get them back out on the out to sea.
Yeah, we get those pirate comics out. Leave our gigs to the landlubbers.
A couple people who do that, and we're doing that. That I'm sure they'll be excited when they can go back out there. I don't know if that's something I could do. I mean, it would be fun to do it like one time, maybe. But I don't know. I don't like the idea of being out at sea like that. It's not so much performing on a cruise ship. It's the actually being on the cruise ship.
Well, I mean,
in
like
the middle of the sea.
I mean, you're not. It's not like a transatlantic voyage. You know what I mean? Still. You're not like down in the hole with like a Sicilian immigrants or something.
No, but still, you're still out to sea. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the sea. like being way out in the middle of it. That, you know, that's just me. I'm a ground person. I like my feet on the ground.
I think it'd be wild.
It would. I mean,
it'd be wild. Just like, what kind of comedy would you do on there? Like, how would you relate to someone who's like eating at the same buffet every day and like being entertained and like treated like a child? Like,
well, I mean.
Depends
on the cruise ships, but it's just like working a lot of them cruise ships is like working a comedy club. I mean, they're from a lot of the comics that I've talked to that work cruise ships, you know, you have to have a lot of material though, because you have to do a variety of shows just for that reason. You know, you have to do like family friendly shows, you have to have a dirty show, and then just maybe like a general
goth
show. So
show.
Like different, like three different shows. You gotta do 3 different hours. I don't know, pretty intense.
Yeah, it's so weird that you could automatically become a full-time professional comedian if you learned how to do comedy for children.
Yeah.
Isn't that insane?
It is insane. And it's very possible. I couldn't do it. I can't even relate to 20-year-olds.
You don't have to, like, relate to kids. You just have to make them think that you're cool.
Well, that's true. Make them think you're cool. Make them laugh, I guess.
Yeah.
If they think you're funny. You don't even have to be funny. You just got to make them think you're funny.
That's true. And have you seen this schlock that they watch? That children watch?
No.
Like, all you have to do is unbox toys.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Go to YouTube and unbox toys and you'll have tons of you. But then you can get booked because you're a YouTube celebrity.
That's true.
And opens up a whole bunch of new opportunities for you. Mm-hmm. I know you said you were doing more stuff with YouTube with your podcast, and you have your podcast, and you also have a game show that you're doing too,
yeah,
right?
Game show's done.
Oh, really?
Well, I have 3 more episodes to release that I have to edit, but by God, like, it is so much work.
Oh, I'm sure.
It is so much work to write all the questions. I make a slideshow. I record it. I book it. And then at the end, I have to edit it. And editing it is such a chore.
Yeah. Video editing is a pain in the butt.
Yeah. So it usually takes me like 3 times as long as the video to edit it, probably about on average.
Yeah.
And this last video I did with Cocozello, two of his friends, the recording session was 3.5 hours
long. Oh, my God. And what do you edit it down to?
The goal is to edit it down to 30 minutes.
Oh, my God.
So,
wow.
Yeah. Which I think is right. I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
no,
I mean?
Like, we're not. Yeah. Yeah. You people have short attention spans. I mean, you look at TikTok and Instagram reels. Nobody wants to spend, you know, they want short stuff. So.
Well, I mean, like, Everybody Who Loves Raymond was 22 minutes, and that had a giant cast. It had writers. Yep. It had everything behind it. It wasn't just a really shitty Ray Romano asking trivia questions to other shitty Ray Romanos. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was 22 minutes.
Yeah.
So trying to cram it shorter. I'm doing that with my podcast now too.
Trying to get
editing
it
that down. Yeah.
Yep. No, there's nothing wrong with that. I try to keep this one under an hour.
Okay.
When I record, but sometimes it goes, if the conversation's really good and it's going organically, I'll let it go longer. It's not. Yeah, but I try to keep, because some of them podcasts that go for like 3 hours, I'm just like,
it's weird. Sometimes I hate it, and sometimes I absolutely love it.
It depends on if I'm traveling.
Yeah.
That's
or doing
me,
chores.
Anyway.
Or like, if it's something where like I don't, there's, so my friends Nathan and Marla have a podcast called America's Barley Basket. That's about these two guys have never watched The Simpsons, which is funny because they're both like millennial comedians,
mm-hmm.
you know, so they're going through and watching every episode. Their episodes are like 2.5 hours long, and I look forward to listening to it every week, even though that I could like just pick up the phone and talk to these dudes. So like, it depends. I listen to those really long Dan Carlin podcasts.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, it like I said, it depends on if I'm traveling. Because for some of them, and it also depends on the podcast, but then the longer ones, what happens is I don't listen to it in one sitting, you know, because unless I'm traveling. Otherwise, it's like, oh, I'm going here, I'll listen to it for a little while, then I'm doing this, then I can listen to it for a while here. So it's, I don't get to do it all in one sitting. But if I'm traveling, I'll do it all in one sitting.
Do you do any quiet time while you're traveling?
Not really.
No. I mean, no meditating.
No. I mean, a lot of times I'm easily distracted and daydream. I always have been a daydream person, which is probably not a good thing when you're driving. Just to like tune out.
Yeah.
But sometimes that does happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll be like, for me, a lot of times when I have a podcast or something going on, it's just background noise. I'll just like tune out and start thinking about other stuff. And it's just there. I mean, there's been plenty of times where I'm like, oh, man, I might have to listen to this podcast again because I just totally missed all of it.
No, I like driving for the time that it gives you. I think it's something that a lot of people don't appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Like I listen to audiobooks, too, which is pretty fun. Like there can be this big book. You're like, I'll never read this, and then just go through. You do it. But I also like just turning everything off and just having like, sounds creepy as hell, but perfect silence. Because that's when you think of things, when you're forced to entertain yourself.
Yeah.
Like that's when you're the most creative.
Yeah. It pushes you to be creative.
Yeah.
Which is good. I mean, and sometimes we need that push because it's so easy not to, just to like get distracted by other things and not like when you're trying to be a creative person, sometimes it just doesn't come naturally because there's other things going on in life and you're like, oh, I'm actively trying to be a comedian. I need to try to be creative and think of new jokes and think of this stuff. So pushing ourselves isn't a bad idea.
Yeah. All right, is that the first question?
No, I don't do this. This is just a conversation.
You have like a question thing.
And this is just stuff that I cover towards the end. That's this is just like
it's your lightning round.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Just don't worry about
it. Yeah,
this.
Please turn it over so I don't look at it.
I'm not doing questions here. This is
I'm like a crazy test. I haven't taken a test for a really long time. But
this
like,
is some stuff I do. Like I said, I do at the end, or if conversation isn't working, then I can.
Well, now it sucks, man, because now, you should have told me that, because now you flip it over.
I'm kidding. This is all stuff I do at the end. It's not if the conversation doesn't go well, because I have a handful of key questions that I like to ask towards the end of the podcast, and this is just my reminder to do it.
Okay. Do you have a name for that? Is it called this segment called Dan's Key Questions?
No, there's no segment. I don't have no segments in this part. This is just conversation.
Dan's Quick Queries.
Talking about comedy.
Okay.
The only segment I have is where we talk about the art of bombing, and that's not even really a segment. But we can go right into that now that I brought it up, because we'll just transition.
Okay.
And so I like to have the comedian that's on, or the guest, talk about a time when they had a show where they bombed or they felt like the show didn't go very well.
Oh. Do most people reveal this?
Most people. I mean, that's why it's called The Art of Bombing. That's what we talk about.
I would just say I'm not comfortable talking about this. I like the idea that just like someone bombed one time and it was so traumatic
that they just can't
refuse to acknowledge it.
I'm sure there's comedians that has happened to. I've had some on here where they're like, I've never bombed.
And what? Just,
and then as we talked, they're like, okay, I bombed more than I thought.
Oh.
Like, see? I mean, it happens to everybody.
I mean, I think at this point, like, a set will go poorly, and I might not connect with the audience. But, like, it's different than, like, the really early bombs.
Oh, yeah.
Where people are, at the end, are looking at me like, is this guy okay? Because I had a lot of those early, starting out really early. Especially since for the first five years I was in Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there weren't a lot of other, there were some good comics out of Fargo, but it's not like here.
Yeah,
I feel like you grow a bit quicker in the cities. And I got some chances to do some longer sets, after when I probably wasn't ready. I did like the one that I can think of that I tell the story to the most often is a triple run that I did. Have you done a triple run before?
I never did a triple run. I know of them. I just never got around to doing one.
It was always on my, it was always on my radar, and then I just never did. But right. I've definitely heard a lot of stories from Tribble Runs.
Yeah, I mean, there's this guy named Tribble. I know nothing else about this man. But, so it was exciting because for comics that kind of live around the American West, Tribble Runs are some of the earliest opportunities they have to feature or to headline.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You go to these small town bars, you know, it's a feature, you get paid $100 a show or whatever. You end up driving 7 hours per show.
Yep. You pretty much break even.
Yeah. None of the audiences are trained to watch comedy, even though it comes there every fucking week. And some of their rooms are okay. Some of the rooms are okay, but some of them are just like, they're just too lazy to like cancel the contract.
They're just,
you know what I mean?
Funny.
Like they can't even get the manager to like consider whether or not it's a good idea anymore. He's signed up for it. This is just like a Discovery Plus subscription someone has. If that makes sense, you
yeah,
know what I mean?
No, yeah,
you forget
yeah.
that you have it.
Yeah, you're just like, then, oh, it's comedy again.
Yeah. I think that happened. So I went to this that. Place called Idaho Falls, which is the most Mormon part of the country. And I went to this place called the Trail Inn, probably the most rundown hotel I've ever been in, and also the first hotel that I stayed in for comedy. But I was so over the moon at the prospect of someone paying me to travel
yep.
to go talk. Like, it's crazy thinking that that is even a thing.
Right.
Like, an agreement that anyone would make with you. So I was excited. I had a room. Like, I was being bedded. You know? I didn't have to do anything besides sleep there. So I was excited. Walk over to the club and, like... You know, it's kind of a crappy bar that has a dancing air up front. And then, like, I'm like, whatever, that's fine. And they said, like, no, you can't have any alcohol during these gigs. And then, like, the guy shows up, and I'm like, is that a thing? He's like, no, you're totally fine here. And he was right. That place was a fucking shit show. So I was working with this guy, Benji Wright, and he was awesome. And there was a host who was from that town, and she had done comedy a couple times. And she'd hosted a couple times, and she was going to bring us up. So she asked for some things. But by that point, she was already slurring her speech.
Oh,
before
Jesus.
She was, like, going to bring us up on stage. She goes up on stage. She bombs pretty bad because no one's paying attention
yeah.
whatsoever. There's one group up front. And then I go on stage. I immediately spill my drink all over the table that was right next to me. And it just stays there. For the entirety of the set, I'm getting no laughs whatsoever.
Oh, no.
A lot of talking back. And this guy, after every punchline I say, says Skittles. And then yells it at me. And then kind of like makes like a kissy face or whatever. I don't know. I think he was trying to rattle me. I think he's a regular here. But these people were all here because there's dancing afterwards. And in Idaho Falls, it's probably the one place that you could drink and fuck. So I get off stage. I go like 2 minutes short. It's one of the worst sets I've ever had. And then the headliner comes up and he's doing okay. He's getting some reaction. But in the middle of his set, the host raises her hand and says, hey, that joke reminds me of a joke that I wrote. And then he's like, okay, that's funny. Ha, like, yeah, it's what comedians are like. And then she walks up on stage and she grabs the mic from him and she starts doing a bit. She grabs a mic from the headliner
what?
And starts doing a bit.
Wow.
And then the headliner's just laughing his ass off. And I'm like, oh my God.
This is like your first road gig?
Yeah.
Wow.
First night, first road gig. And she gets done, she goes off stage, and then she fucking does it again. She goes back up on stage and does another joke about blowjobs. Which I don't even think was related to what he was talking about, but I got that second one on video. I got the rest of the set on video, but yeah,
wow.
So that was like, that was my first road gig and it was absolute hell. And I had to drive so far to get there.
Yeah.
Like I drove like 12 hours that day.
Were you doing something. Like a run though? Did you have a couple more? Okay.
Yep.
So at least there's that. But yeah, still some of those gigs were terribly long drives to get to.
Yeah.
For those ones, because they were kind of more in the Pacific Northwest kind of.
Yep.
A lot of like a lot of shows like they were like Idaho, Northern Nevada. A lot of those triple runs.
Yep.
But
I did. They had one club. I don't know what they have right now.
Oh, yeah, they have.
That's in Richland, Jokers. Washington.
Yep, Jokers.
I did that once, too.
Oh, did you? Oh, yep. Nice. How was that?
It was okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I would have done it now as opposed to back then. I would for sure do a lot better now.
I feel like that's how we feel a lot of times, though. I've had gigs where I definitely know that I would do better now. It's a lot, it's a lack of experience. You know what I mean? You don't have the experience, so you don't have the tools to necessarily handle the situation. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you went up and spilled a drink, chances are you wouldn't even spill a drink. But if something happened, you're probably not just going to let the drink sit there. You know, you probably make a joke about it, but then have somebody come take care of it or whatever.
Yeah.
Make that part of your, and then make
I'd
fun
be able
of that.
To deal.
You'd be able to deal with it. Exactly. It's experience that we don't always have.
Yeah. It was more like feeling like I was at a fancy dinner party. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that I was such a burden to be on stage for all these people, and I had to do everything well, and then the second that it started going south, I'm like, well, sorry.
I guess
I'll leave.
You don't want me here.
Yeah.
I'll just be going.
But yeah, I've bombed plenty of times.
We all do, but I mean, that's part of the process. You know, if we're not bombing, we're not getting better. I mean, you don't learn from doing good. When you do good and just copy that, you just end up becoming stagnant. You just plateau. That's the way I look at it. I mean, you can look at these bad shows and you can look back even on this, your first road gig, and know that these different things happened to you. And if they happened again, you would be able to handle it a different way.
That's true.
Yeah. And then it definitely doesn't help too, like with a lot of shows, especially these road gigs like that, where they're at these bars and stuff where nobody's there for comedy. So in some of them situations, you could be the best comic in the world and it might not matter because they don't give, you know.
But what I want to do on these road gigs, and this is my goal whenever I do these smaller towns, is I will never give up. I'm going to find a way to make someone laugh who just kind of doesn't even want to be here. You know, like I'm not going to give up on it.
Yeah.
Like that's the way to do it.
One of my favorite things is when you can tell that somebody doesn't want to be at a show, and then you make them laugh. Even if it's just one laugh, it's like, psh, got them.
Yeah.
You know, because that's why I like doing, I like going to mixed open mics. Because a lot of times.
With all the races, or what are you talking about?
Yeah. I don't like segregated mics.
Okay.
Oh, wow. No, but I mean, like, music mics. You know,
where
it's, like, music, mostly music, but they call them mixed mics because, you know, they're like, oh, you can do spoken word or whatever. But a lot of times when you do comedy at those, the people are there. You can listen to music and not have to be vested. You know, so doing comedy at a mixed mic, people come to listen to the music or whatever, and then it's more of a challenge because now you got to get these people to try to pay attention. And if you can do that and you can get them to start paying attention to the jokes, then, you know, you're on to something.
Yeah.
So you can really, really test whether or not some material is going to work or not. And that's like one of my favorite things is to go to a mixed open mic and then win over the crowd that could care less about comedy.
Yeah.
Because they came for music.
Kind of. They came because they said they would.
Well, I mean,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
People going to listen to spoken word, like, without being pressured or, like, being in an abusive relationship with a poet. Do you really think there are people that go out and...
Maybe.
Listen to just a random guy playing the guitar?
There's a lot of people that are into different things, but, yeah, most people just end up at the bar and there's that open mic. It's probably a lot like comedy that happens, you know, like open mics at bars where people just come to go to because it's their bar, and then suddenly there's a comedy show. Probably the same thing.
I mean, I know that from every time that I've been at a mic is before I did comedy. It was entirely an accident.
Oh, really?
Every time.
Is that what got you to kind of push you to do comedy? Like, you just started to hit, like,
yeah. So what actually happened is I was with someone, and we were walking along Main Street in Fargo, and there was this coffee shop called the Red Raven, and we were just poking our head in there. I thought it was a cool building, and it is. It's an old fire station that's been converted into this coffee shop. I walk in there, there's 70 people in the audience for a comedy open mic.
Mm-hmm. That mic always...
People are losing their shit. There's like 20 some comics signed up, and then like I'm gonna try this in a couple months.
Nice. Yeah. I actually I performed there once, one of the open mics, once or twice.
Yeah,
it was always a good crowd there. Seemed like
yeah
it.
I mean it's not been operating for this whole period of time.
Well, yeah I mean there's a lot of those venues haven't been operating.
Yeah.
It's almost like there was a weird pandemic or something.
Yeah. But like when I started, it was huge. Like comedy was huge in Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
The second or third time I went to Red Rave and I couldn't get up because there were too many people signed up.
Really? Wow.
It was 30 people that were already signed up to go onto the mic in Fargo.
Wow, that's amazing.
Which is crazy.
That is crazy for Fargo. Wow, 30 people. How long ago did you start comedy? Just out of curiosity.
I was going to say that would be the equivalent of 360 people being signed up for a mic in the cities.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. You're absolutely right. It's insane.
Yeah.
For the size of the town.
Yeah. So I started in 2012.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I moved here at the end of 2000. Or was it? The beginning of 2017.
Okay.
I moved here.
I was you weren't doing comedy when I went to Fargo. Yet. Because I started in 2010, and then I did go up there a couple times to do some mics before I moved out to California. That's how I met some of the people from Fargo.
Oh, okay.
That's, you know, I know that's where I met Will, Spotted Bear.
You're pretty good about doing that, right? Like, traveling to places to, like, try out a mic and see a scene and...
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, not as much as I used to. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. now it's... I'll say this. If I'm traveling somewhere for, like, a vacation...
Yeah.
I'm going to be inclined to see if I can hit an open mic and check out the scene while I'm on that vacation.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to... Now I'm not at the point where I'm just going to go take a vacation to go do open mics.
Yeah, you're not going to be like, I have to meet the comedians of Menominee, Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're just going to, like, drive 5 hours there.
Exactly.
And meet dudes and then drive back. Okay.
But if opportunity presents itself, like sometimes if I'm working the road and I'm doing a shit, like if I'm at a place for a couple of days or whatever, and there's a chance that I can go hit an open mic in addition to what I'm doing there for shows, I'll go to the open mic. Even if I don't get stage time, I'll go check it out just because then I can meet other comics and still do the networking and check out the scene.
Yeah, I'm so bad at that shit.
I mean, because that's a lot of what comedy is. It's networking, which, you really have to...
Why can't everyone just come to my house and offer me gigs by sliding checks through the little check slot? Or the mail slot.
You know how you get them to come to your house?
What?
You do an open mic in your backyard.
Oh.
You start doing shows in your backyard. Comics will start coming. And then maybe...
Weird ones will. Not ones that can get me that scratch, you know?
I don't know that there's scratch in comedy.
Those dollar bills.
I just posted today about a group that I somehow was in that... They basically pay all the talent on the show a combined total of $120 to $150. And that's every person on the show. And that's pretty much the equivalent of what a feature should make on a regular, you know, on a...
Yeah.
Basically what a feature makes at a normal road show. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's insane to me that's what they pay all the talent. It was like $60 for headliners, $40 for the feature. It just and comics will do them gigs, which what really, really just blows my mind. Because it's very unfortunate because then they set a bar. Then these people are like, well, I can get away with paying shit.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. So, like, when it comes to there's... Okay, so the problem with comedian pay, it's just a supply and demand issue. So if you want comedian pay to go up, you need to set up a bunch of like barriers for a bunch of comedians to get into.
I think we need to start the Comedian Assassination Club.
Yeah. I mean, you basically have to unionize. What you basically have to do is you have to unionize, get cards, and if someone is caught on a mic without a card, you end up breaking their legs.
Yep,
like, exactly. Like, that's basically the only way. Seriously, it's the only way, apart from, like, some kind of federally or state-mandated minimum comedy wage.
Yep. And, well, and that's, I'm sure that's why there's insane actors' unions. Excuse me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what they try to do, is to protect that. But yeah, it's interesting because that's something I've heard people in the industry talk about a little bit, like trying to get a union started, but it's never went anywhere.
You could do it. You could do it for like the big clubs. Mm-hmm. That's where like you'd have some kind of sway. But a place that's only planning on spending $120 doesn't care if they're getting union or non-union comedians.
Oh, no. Exactly. They don't care. Well, they don't care now if they're getting good comedians or not. That's why they're like, $120 and you'll put on a whole show? Sure, let's do it. We don't care. Which is sad because a lot of these places, it just goes to show you there's no forward thinking because they don't think about now, okay, so they pay $120 for a show. They get a terrible show. Their patrons come to this show. They're like, that was terrible. And now they may never come back to your bar again because they're like, well, you put on bad entertainment. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so you potentially lose customers, not just
even
for comedy,
for other events. Yeah, if the band's like, coming in, they're going to be like, oh, you pay $100 for this band?
Band can't be that great. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which is unfortunate. There's, like I said, there's not a lot of forward thinking in the industry. But
on the other hand, what do we provide? You know what I mean?
I don't know.
People have that good of a time at comedy shows?
Sometimes.
Really?
I've seen shows where people had the best time of their lives. Good. Right. I mean,
it's weird.
That's why they go to them. I mean, you're not going to see that probably in a bar, but... I mean, some bar shows, I've done some bar shows that have been pretty good. I did one actually not too long ago that I was impressed by the owner of the bar because he was basically running it like a club. You know, even though it was in a bar, he had they pre-sold tickets. They had assigned seating and people were coming in. He was putting them in where they went. And then there was a issue with a heckler and he told them that if they didn't, you know, cut it out, he'd throw him out. Like, he was...
Oh, shit.
In fact, he was stricter than some comedy clubs when it comes to the heckling stuff. I was like, wow, this is amazing. I was like, hard to believe that I'm performing in a bar right now.
Where was that? What town?
It was in Tomahawk, Wisconsin.
Okay.
So, it's one of the pub and grub gigs.
Oh.
But like I said, the bar owner... You know, he even said, he's like, yeah, I'm trying to run this as close as I can to a comedy club. He's like, I've been to plenty of comedy shows and this is something that I want to keep doing at the bar, but you know, I want to make sure that it's good for everybody.
Uh-huh.
And that, just that little bit of extra effort makes the whole difference because the comics, we had a good time performing. It was a good show, you know, plus it helped that it was sold out. And the crowd had a good time because they came and they got essentially a comedy club experience in this small town.
Yeah.
Where there's no, you know, there's no comedy club or probably would ever be a comedy club because it couldn't support a whole comedy club.
Yeah.
But they got that experience. So.
No, it's fun. And I think that is something that could exist in a bunch of small towns all over the place.
Yep.
And I think that if you would have gone back to the 80s. That was something that did exist.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, if you're back in the 80s, you go to a town that's over 500 people, they probably have at least monthly comedy night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's possible. I mean, it's possible for small towns to do that.
Oh, yeah. I honestly...
Like, a monthly comedy night that's run well and, like,
I think some of the best comedy shows I've done have been in smaller towns. Because the other thing is, a lot of times everybody in the town comes to the show.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah. But you got to give up certain things then. In those small, I do like small town shows, but like, you're going to realize halfway through your set that like, the easiest way to make this a lot of fun is to just pick on the town scapegoat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just bully them until everyone applauds. I don't know.
Everyone there are a lot of people that or hates you.
Yeah. No. There's just a lot of like, you know, everyone knows each other, yep. So they have a crowd work gets a lot bigger response.
Yep.
Than jokes typically do. That's where like a lot of my like a lot of my jokes change. So there's like a question involved in it, some kind of response, mm-hmm. or I have an interaction with someone. I have a bunch of one-liners that switched into that because of these small town shows.
Yeah,
it's so much easier to get people invested into. Yeah.
I was just going to say, do you try to do more crowd work then when you're, like, in those shows, like, smaller shows like that? Like
I wouldn't even say that I try to. It just...
Just happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think,
like, I just choose it.
Yeah.
In the middle without even thinking about it.
Just kind of comes up. Yeah. Kind of ends up... You make adapt. A choice, but it you adapt, so it comes out organically instead of forced, mm-hmm. which is always good. I think when it comes to, like, crowd work, organic crowd work is way better than... forced, and I've seen people try to force crowd work, and sometimes that gets really awkward.
Yeah, I don't think I could ever do that, where I just point at someone and be like, what's your job?
Yeah, and then
carpenter? Okay.
Or they...
Snappy carpenter joke that you thought was off the cuff.
Or what happens is you do your, what's your job? And they just don't talk to you, you know? Yeah. And then it makes it really awkward.
I have no follow-up.
Because then the comic either tries to prod more, which makes it even more awkward, or, you know, then they just move on. But it still creates a weird tension in the room that, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I think the going organically is always the best way. So if it happens organically, that's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I personally... I'm not really a crowd work person, so I try to stick to my script the best I can. But sometimes you can't help it. Crowd work is going to happen because when you have to deal with a heckler or whatever,
yeah,
things happen. Now, the bumming and bombing, the dreadful feeling you get after you have a bad set or after you bomb, how long does that typically last for you, and how has that changed over the years?
Well, for me, I think earlier on, like, there was a little bit more of a hit to my self-esteem when I bombed. Because I hadn't had a history where, like, you know, a few things went well. At this point, like, enough things have gone well that I know that, like, I can be pretty disappointed in how I did. But, like, it's not an existential crisis. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I can't do comedy at this point. The times that, like, it really bothers me when I bomb now... is when something is at stake. So, like, I've lost 3 times in the finals for contests and bombed.
Oh, time. No. Like,
arguably bombed.
That sucks.
And there isn't anything specific, like, I can point to that I did. There were good audiences each time, but there was just something. I just had the yips? Isn't that like a baseball term?
Maybe.
Like
I'm not a sports guy, so I wouldn't know. You're
just like suddenly, like you just lost that
innate
ability to do something. Yeah. So that's what hurts. Like losing contests or like knowing that a booker might be watching you or being on stage in front of certain people for the first time. That's what really bothers me. Also, if it's a longer drive too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Because that's like, not only you really have all that time when you're driving back, but you have to think about that bomb. Even if it's the next day, you're still like,
But like here, for instance, like just with open mics, doing an open mic, I don't even know what bombing would mean mm-hmm. at an open mic. But when I was younger man, it felt like every time that I went up on stage for an open mic, bombing was a very real possibility. But at this point, it's not. Like, if people don't laugh, it's just because, like, it's an open mic and, like, people aren't that.
Yeah. I think that's very important like you said, when we first start, we don't think about that because we don't know any better. But I'm the same way when it comes to, like, if I don't do good at an open mic, I don't care because I'm like, I'm trying something. I don't
Yeah.
I go into an open mic expecting not to do well. Because it's an open mic.
Yeah, and I can tell my best joke in an open mic and tell it perfectly, not get a laugh.
Yep.
And doesn't rattle me at all.
I'm the same. Yeah, very similar in that aspect where if there's something at stake, you know, there is like an audition or, you know, or even if I'm getting paid for something and I don't do well, because then I have to go ask for money afterwards. And that's where it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you saw that, but please pay me and then I'll get out of here and you'll never have to see me again. Mm-hmm. when you tell a joke that doesn't land, a joke that bombs or you feel like you're bombing or losing the crowd, what goes through your mind?
Well, I have a couple like kind of dumb saver jokes that sometimes I'll do. One thing that I do, since I'm like a one-liner comedian, I can somewhat like think of, okay, what was that joke like? What other jokes are like that? And then I'll be like, I'm going to skip all those jokes. Mm-hmm. Down the line. That happens a lot of
times.
That's
a good skill with me to have.
Yeah. So that happens a lot of times. So sometimes like some will go really well and then I'm telling some more esoteric joke or more subtle joke. It doesn't go that well. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to say that woman has a dirty vagina or something. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to go as crass as hell.
Yeah.
Not that bad. But, like, I'll go crasser. Mm-hmm. If it's a bar gig and, like, they don't like my joke about unicycles, like, all right, here we go. Like, it's going to get gross. This is on you.
You didn't laugh at me. You made the decision here.
Yes. So, I mean, honestly, like, for those kind of crowds that aren't going to laugh at the more subtle stuff, you're not going to sell it. Like, you just have to give up, and you just got to go hard, really crass, really blunt, in my opinion. Yep. And usually that will get something.
Oh, yeah. Especially in bars.
In bars.
Yeah.
If it's a comedy club, like an early show at a comedy club, maybe that's different.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're like, oh, he's unrelatable and very offensive. You know what I mean? So,
and then you're just screwed.
Yeah. So actually, I think it's easier for me to like recalibrate when I'm at a bar than at a comedy club.
Yeah. But being able to recalibrate at all is a good skill. Like, because there's a lot of comics. And that also goes with having material and writing jokes and things like that. Because there's some comics that they can't recalibrate because they don't have any other material to go to. They're just like, well, this is all I got, so this is what we're doing. And even though you're not going to laugh at any of it, here we go.
Yeah.
Because I don't have anything else in my bag of jokes that I can switch.
I will
up
see,
to.
Though. I mean, like, these sets are typically 30 minutes long.
Yeah.
I wonder if I did a 45-minute set, I would just... And it would, and I hit like an obstacle. I maybe just completely derail.
I've always been intrigued and admire people who do one liners, especially long form, because that's a lot of jokes to memorize. Like, what do you do to try to memorize jokes?
Like, so memorizing the jokes themselves. Like, if you named one of my jokes, I could tell it perfectly. I could do that with probably 1,000 jokes.
Wow.
Because one-liners are very simple and they're logical. Like, I maybe wouldn't say it with the exact same words, but it would have the same structure and would hit the same points.
Mm-hmm.
It just all fits together perfectly. What's hard is memorizing a set list.
Memorizing them in a certain order.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So when I'm doing those longer sets time after time, then after a while, I just know. I just know what note I have to refresh. But, like, tonight I'm going to go to a mic, and I've been trying to, like, record with video all my performances and also do it without notes. I have 15 jokes. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go through them, you know, 10, 15 times.
Mm-hmm.
The order.
Just over and over and over until I have it down.
Until
it's in that muscle memory.
What you do is you come up with connections between things.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So, like, on a shirt it says bombing, and right here's a beer. My connection between those two would be Jaeger. So, like, there's Jaeger bombs, beers at a bar.
Yep.
With the Jaeger bombs. So I just come up with, like, little
things that'll help you.
Yeah, connect. Mnemonic. mnemonic device. Yeah, that's right. Mnemonic devices. God damn it.
Maybe. I don't know. Okay. I'm going to take your word for it and believe that that's the right word.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I like that because like I said, it's because I've seen, like, are you familiar with Dwight York?
Yeah.
You know, like, I've watched him. He's another one-liner, and it's mm-hmm. just like, wow. Just to watch him do, like, a whole hour of one-liners is insane.
His, like, are even more one-linery than mine are.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily because of the length, but all his jokes are kind of the same in their structure. Like, and in how he delivers them.
Yeah.
Too.
Well, yeah, especially because he always follows the joke with the same thing. He does, like, that smile.
Yeah, and he, like, does.
and he really leans into the smile if a joke doesn't land.
Yeah, it's very, like, it's very, like, redneck meets Borscht Belt, if that makes sense. Like, that old-timey, like, just telling a bunch of one-liners. He's written all of them, and they're really funny. Like, he was one of the first... Yeah, one-liner comedians I was really into.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not... That does not surprise me, then.
Yeah.
Because he was pretty popular in this area, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I worked with him one time years and years and years ago. I did, like, a guest spot on the show he was on, and I was just like, wow, this is amazing. Because, like, to see that, like, an hour of just one-liner after one-liner after one-liner, and I'm just like, oh. I don't think I can remember all that. Because a lot of the stuff that I do, like, I have some one-liners that are mixed in with my stuff.
Yeah. But
a lot of what I do are stories that experiences. So it's easy to remember because it's like I'm telling just memories that are already there. You know, it's a matter of just going in there and making it funny or whatever. But so when I see somebody do a bunch of one-liners, I'm just like, wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. I know we talked about, because I asked you about, you know, how you memorize all the one-liners and stuff. What else do you do to analyze a set after, say, you bomb or it doesn't go well? What are you doing to try to
It's so hard. So, besides, like, trying to keep a memory of what went well, sometimes I will go through and I'll rate how the jokes went.
You do, like, a grading
scale? And I'll have, like, a grading scale, but then, like, I'll set up a big spreadsheet. And I do it for like 2 weeks and I stop doing it. And then I just delete the spreadsheet because it's outdated. So I just started another one right now. Hopefully I'll keep with it for a while. The other thing that I like to do, but I don't do it enough, is doing workshops.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't even think you really need, for the writing, sometimes you just need to sit down with someone and just say the joke.
Yep.
And they say, like, this is how what I understand the joke to be.
Yep.
This is what I thought was unnecessary. You know, sometimes I'll have jokes, especially with one-liners, where someone will say, I literally don't understand what the point of that joke is. And I'm like, well, I don't share the same assumptions as a lot of other people about that are behind this joke. So I have to spell it out more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I suppose that you're having your podcast. It's a good way to shameless plug for your podcast, Joke Quest 200. That's probably helped with that too, like having other comics. Because, you know, I'm sure you put a lot of your own one-liners that you're, you know, written, and then that helps you get a little bit of feedback on them to try to improve it.
Yeah. Yeah, to a certain extent. But, like, in that podcast, I try not to do any workshopping whatsoever. A little bit if it's funny workshopping,
mm-hmm.
that's not practical advice. Like, when you're talking about, like, Adam's Deepak Chopra dots or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't a serious workshopping of that joke. That joke just could just go in the trash, and then you just move on.
Yeah.
So that's the only time that I, like, do some workshopping. Otherwise, I like to, maybe you go on a tangent, or you just, like, expand and make it a monstrosity of what it once was.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, you start talking about, like belts, and then it goes into, like, politics or pedophilia or something.
Just take it. You know what I mean? Take it to the extreme.
Like, this extreme that wouldn't work at all on stage. So, yeah, I think it helps a bit. I mean, it's making me be more honest about my writing consistently, because I write, you know, I do 8 jokes a week
yeah.
for that. But in terms of workshopping. I think workshopping isn't that entertaining. I think it's not as entertaining as some people think it is. It's entertaining when you're talking about your own jokes or bringing up your own thoughts, but like, I think that people on the outside, I don't know, probably wouldn't enjoy listening to it that much.
And that's fair. Because then you end up with a more of a tight-ish audience.
Yeah,
you're looking. You instead of just entertaining the general public, you're more leaning towards entertaining.
You're looking. You're probably leaning towards like open micers that are within their first or second year.
Yeah,
because that's when I would have enjoyed that podcast.
Yeah,
that's when I was like really heavy in comedy podcasts. Like, give me as much stuff as possible. I was in a comedy podcast of people that were like down in Valdosta, Georgia, very poorly produced. With a bunch of guests whose names I don't even know. And I'm like, this is awesome. Like, they're telling me what to do to get booked as a host at my local club. You know what I mean?
Now the real question is, did any of that work?
I think so. I don't know if, like, in particular that podcast helped, but there was a book that I picked up pretty early on called Don't Wear Shorts on Stage, which I think did help. Have you read that book before?
I've not read that book, but I am familiar with
it. All right. It would take you 20 minutes to read it. It's super short. But yeah, it just taught me some stuff about like pretty common sense stuff about like professionalism, but a lot of people like pay no mind
to
that whatsoever and are like just really surprised that comedy's not going exactly how it's pictured in their head. And it gave me more realistic expectations. They were still unrealistic. And I'm still way behind what I thought I was going to be. But, like, it gave me more realistic, you know, ones.
For sure. I actually just read Mastering Stand-Up, which is a book that came out a couple of years ago by Steven Rosenfeld, who is a comedy teacher in New York. And even, you know, I've been doing comedy almost 11 years, and it's like, wow. Even from reading that book, it opened my mind up to some different things that kind of overlooked or didn't think about and just gave me a different perspective on certain things within comedy. So I think at any level you can continue to learn. There's always something new that can be learned in comedy.
Yeah. I think at this point though, I know most of the basic tips and tricks.
Yeah.
Probably more the issue is a lack of self-awareness on certain things. Mm-hmm. And I think I would need, like, a therapist. I do have a regular therapist, but I would need, like, a comedy therapist.
Well, next time you go to your therapist, you got to be like, we got to change things up.
Yeah. You need to be way funnier.
Since I'm paying you, you got to put a little effort into this.
You have to watch all these sets of mine. Punch up my jokes.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up. We're not quite done. I got a few more things I like to do. First thing, I have an Art of Bombing Get Pumped for Comedy playlist.
Okay.
What's a song that gets you pumped? Doesn't have to get you pumped for comedy, but what's a song that gets you pumped?
Ooh, let's do Apache Indian.
Apache Indian.
Yeah. That Boom Shakalaka. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You do?
Believe so.
Okay. I think I've had that played on once. Someone gave me a free reign to pick
That's funny.
Song to go up to.
And then, because like I said, we talk about the bombing and stuff, I like to end more on a positive note. What's one of your favorite gigs that you've done so far?
Ooh. Oh, man. I think my favorite time doing comedy was probably like we had a contest in Fargo and I won the contest, and it was just like being with all my friends and having like 300 people around and like doing well and then just getting like a big wad of cash and just buying a bunch of shots for everybody.
Oh, nice.
Like that's a good way to end a
right?
And no, just partying most of the weekend. Yeah.
That's a good way.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was fun.
I would do that once a year for sure.
That's awesome. All right, the last thing I do is called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20. I'm going to ask you a corresponding question that may or may not be comedy related.
All right, let's do 11.
11 it is. What is the dumbest way you've been injured?
Oh, the dumbest way I've been injured. Oh, man. Well, I don't know. This is probably not the dumbest way I've been injured, but last summer I bruised my ribs doing a slip and slide.
Some people might think that's the dumb way to get injured.
You think at so? Least it's at like our a 35-year-old.
I was at our age.
Yeah, I just like splayed out. I just like went bam right on my torso from like 4 feet up.
Or they might be so like, that well, pretty... that's at your age. That's obvious if you're gonna get on.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never fallen drunk or something. I don't know. Yeah, that's probably it. That's probably the best
I wish
I ever
could
know.
Say that.
Yeah. Done dumb shit.
Never done like, fallen drunk.
I've never I've had friends that have like lost teeth and stuff.
Oh yeah, I haven't lost teeth drunk, but I've got scars on my legs from falls from when I was drunk.
Yeah.
Of course, it didn't help. I was doing cartwheels, but that's...
Also, tore my ass last year.
What?
Doing sit-ups, which sounds really weird.
Okay, now like, that sounds like a dumb way to, like, injure yourself.
Yeah, doing sit-ups.
Tore your ass doing sit-ups.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was extremely painful, and the pain didn't go away for 12 months.
Oh, my God.
From doing sit-ups. That's how out of shape I am.
Damn.
Where I was before I got injured. Now I'm even worse.
All right. All right. Yeah. Where can people find you? Where can they find you online and plug whatever you want to plug?
Okay. I have a website, but I don't keep it very updated. I would recommend going to joke-quest.com. That's where my website is. Check out Joke Quest 200 on any podcast services. Also, I'm posting a bunch of content to my YouTube channel. I'm also the one posting all the comments. And you can find that. How did someone find that? My name is Joe Christensen. Just type that in, Joe Christensen Comedy, into your search bar on YouTube, and you will come across my shit.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks for doing this. It's been fun.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you. Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production. Hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.